reverse Barrister decision in January 2022. The UK Supreme Court affirmed the High Court's dismissal of Assange appeal in March, paving the way for Patel's decision ordering extradition. Amnesty International Agnes Callamard, former UN Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Summary or Arbitrary Execution, was skeptical of the so-called assurances that Assange would be treated humanely in US custody. Diplomatic assurances provided by the U.S. that Assange will not be kept in solitary confinement cannot be taken on face value given previous history, Callamard said, referring to the U.S. reneging on past extradition assurances. Assange now has until July 1st to appeal Patel's decision and apply to the High Court to reverse Barrister's ruling on the other issues Assange raised on the extradition hearing. Assange will also raise on appeal the CIA's plot to kidnap and assassinate him while he was in the Ecuadorian embassy under a grant of asylum. If Assange loses his appeals to the UK High Court and Supreme Court, he could appeal to the European Court of Human Rights. The appeals could take several months or even years. The indictment against Assange has been assigned to U.S. District Judge Claude M. Hilton, who jailed former U.S. Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning in 2019 for refusing to appear before a federal grand jury investigating Assange. The indictment charges that Assange conspired with Manning to gain access to a government computer. This is the first time the United States has prosecuted a journalist or media outlet for publishing classified information. The extradition, trial, and conviction of Julian Assange would have frightening ramifications for investigative journalism. On June 17th, the editorial board of The Guardian wrote, "This action potentially opens the door for journalists anywhere in the world to be extradited to the U.S. for exposing information deemed classified by Washington."
This is IRIB English Radio. IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahan Abbott, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Yemenis from all walks of life flocked to the street of Yemen's capital Sana'a to commemorate the third Imam of Shia Muslims, Imam Hussein. He was martyred on Ashura, the 10th day of the lunar month of Muharram.
We went out as Yemenis to commemorate the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, who inspired patience and steadfastness in us in the face of the forces of global arrogance. We are in a battle with thousands of people like Yazid and even worse than him, including America and Israel. They attacked the Yemenese people and the Palestinian people. They are still killing our women and children. So this memory gives us hope that the values we learned from Imam Hussein will make us live generously and win at the end of the battle.
Imam Hussein, protesters said, is still alive because of his immortalized values and beliefs, which reject the oppression and corruption that Yemenis are currently experiencing. They further said Imam Hussein was the symbol of revolution and tenacity, who motivated Yemenis to resist the Saudi-led attack on their country.
This day is very important to us as we consider Ashura part of our identity. We are with Imam Hussein with our souls. Ashura this year coincides with the battle with the Zionist enemy. So the nation will follow the path of Imam Hussein in his jihad until the liberation of all occupied lands, especially occupied Al-Quds. And Yemen has come a long way towards freedom and independence.
After refusing to pledge alliance to the tyrant of the day, Yazid, in 680 AD, Imam Hussein and 72 of his companions and family members were killed during the Battle of Karbala.
People, he believed that Yemen has become a modern-day Karbala with the Saudi-led coalition killing people, displacing civilians, and enforcing a siege on the country. People, he are confident that Yemen's fight against the enemy will ultimately lead to victory. Abdul Latif Roshali, Sana.
Like every other Muslim nation in the world, Afghans mark the 10-day mourning ceremonies for the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his companions. Tasua, which falls on the 9th of Muharram and is devoted to Imam Hussein's half-brother, Abu Fazl al-Abbas, drew hundreds of mourners to one of Kabul's old shrines. Attendees listened to clerics' speeches regarding the Battle of Karbala and beat on their chests.
This year, we are marking Muharram rituals under the rule of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. However, our processions are more crowded, passionate, and prosperous than previous ones. You know that Muharram is not only related to Shias, so we have our Sunni brothers taking part in ceremonies and services shoulder to shoulder with Shias.
We Afghan girls share the grief of Karbala tragedies with Zainab, Imam Ali's daughter. We are all sorrowful on this day and remember the suffering and bravery of our role model, Hazrat Zainab. Today, we live under the flag and our hijab shows that we are her firm followers.
On Ashura, Afghan Muslims shut their businesses and take a day off to pay tribute to Karbala martyrs. They say prayers and hold charity events. This year, despite security threats, they took part in mass mourning ceremonies alongside Taliban officials.
Today is the martyrdom anniversary of great and respected Islamic figure and grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. I offer my condolences to you and all Muslims. Undoubtedly, Imam Hussein sacrificed his life to save Islam. We, the people of Afghanistan, followed Imam Hussein's path through fighting against invasion, arrogance, and oppression. May Allah keep the love of Imam Hussein alive in the hearts of all of us.
Ashura is significantly important in Islamic calendar. Ashura and Imam Hussein's school of thought teach us freedom, bravery, resistance, and Islamic unity. This righteous path will last until doomsday. We Muslims globally are obliged to announce and spread the message of Ashura to all Muslim and non-Muslim people, especially youths.
The commemoration comes as Shia Afghans have been repeatedly targeted in places of worship and schools by terrorist groups, only because of their ethnicity and beliefs. On the 7th and 8th of Muharram this year, two bomb explosions killed and injured more than 30 Shia mourners. Afghanistan has witnessed different social and political changes over the course of centuries. Against the odds, Shia Muslims have been steadfast in remembering the Battle of Karbala and Imam Hussein's martyrdom. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Hundreds of mourners marched through various streets wearing black and reciting elegies in honor of Imam Hussein, who, along with dozens of his household members and loyal companions, were martyred in Karbala in present-day Iraq.
The marchers here said this is a time for sorrow and self-reflection when one commits himself completely to the mourning. They said the mourning and the reflection of the tragic events at Karbala are intended to connect to the suffering and martyrdom of Imam Hussein.
This very day, March 10th of Muharram, is the day of sadness, is the day of agony. is the day of shedding tears to all Muslims. And the reason is that in the field of Karbala, Imam Hussein was being mercilessly killed by Umayyad leaders.
The mourners also engaged in chest beating as the procession moved around the town in the hot tropical sun. The mourners said Ashura not only signifies intense grief for Imam Hussein, but is also a motivation for resistance against injustice in the world.
Imam Hussein has submitted his life entirely in order to save Islam. And that is what Malik Ibrahim Zakzaki Hafizahullah is calling for, that the entire Muslim and even non-Muslim, even Christian, let us gather together to fight oppressors, let humanity and then justice be in our nation.
Many of the mourners said they will continue this struggle to resist injustice because, as the well-known phrase goes, every day is Ashura and every land is Karbala. Danjuma Abdullahi, Suleja.
Throngs of Londoners marching through the center of the British capital to commemorate Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, brutally murdered in the Battle of Karbala 1400 years ago. Similar processions in the rest of the UK and the world to mourn him and his 72 companions killed along with him, among them members of his family. Their crime, standing up to the tyrant of the time, the Caliph Yazid.
It was a tragic incident that happened many years ago, but the moral stand that Imam Hussein took has transcended time and space. Its reverberations felt through generations, and this is proof of it.
Many generations later, men, women, and children flagellate themselves to identify with the suffering of the Prophet's grandson, a man of morals who strived for social justice.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam represents all of the martyrs in all the world throughout human history and planetary geography.
For me, he represents justice, bravery, and sacrifice.
His story is an example to mankind. As he stood against oppression and injustices.
And it's not just the mourning that unites the people here. For them, the march is an annual chance to share the legacy of Imam Hussein beyond the borders of their countries of origin. Saeed Purza, London.
Mourners in Karachi commemorated the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein's youngest child, who was not spared by the enemy forces.
The 6-month-old Ali Asghar, the youngest son of Imam Hussein, was martyred by the forces of Yazid, the Battle of Karbala, and Imam Hussein's sacrifices for righteousness and freedom are still a source of inspiration for Muslims around the world.
Mothers who brought their babies along paid tribute to Ali Asghar on the first Friday of the Islamic month of Muharram and mourned the 6-month-old son of Imam Hussein.
What had the 6-month-old done? We are out on the streets recalling the message of that innocent child of Imam Hussein, that we will always stand against the tyrant of the time. We will always stand shoulder to shoulder with the oppressed, no matter what.
Special eulogies and rituals were performed to commemorate the incident where Ali Asghar was killed with an arrow shot in his throat in the plains of the Iraqi city of Karbala.
We are commemorating the martyrdom anniversary of Ali Asghar, the youngest martyr of Karbala, who teaches us the lessons of readiness and sacrifice in the face of injustice and brutality.
Ali Asghar was martyred while he was in the arms of his father Imam Hussein, who was pleading for water to quench the thirst of his little baby. The grandson of Prophet Muhammad and his companions sacrificed their lives but refused to pledge allegiance to the unjust Umayyad Caliph Yazid. Muhammad Turi, Karachi.
Prayers, storytelling, and tearful rhythmic chanting are all expected when Shia Muslims begin their annual Muharram commemorations across the globe. Shia Muslims mourn the first 10 days of the Islamic month of Muharram, remembrance of the martyrdom of the Prophet Muhammad's grandson Imam Hussein, who was unjustly slain by an oppressive tyrant some 1,400 years ago.
It isn't only in the East that you witness the mass commemoration of Imam Hussein's legacy, but also a growing community in the West, particularly of Shia Muslim converts, are benefiting tremendously from the story of Imam Hussein.
We spoke to one convert who explained to us why he felt Shia Islam was the ideal faith for him.
That's what I did like about the following of the Ahlul Bayt, because I could see in the condition of black people in the past, we suffered quite a lot. In the past, and when you look at the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, it's there too, that they see people suffering and they didn't like it in their time. And similarly, when we reflect on Hussein and our lives today, we've got to think Hussein didn't like that we mistreated and not respected as a human being. So it's important that we emulate what he stood for.
Despite the growth, some community leaders feel more work is needed to be done to support new converts. Shia Muslims currently make up about 15% of the estimated 3 million Muslims in Britain, with well over 100 mosques across the nation. Ensuring Imam Hussein's memory is being shared like never before. Robert Carter, London.
The United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories says these attacks are illegal and irresponsible. The Israeli regime, however, says they are a preemptive act of self-defense against a Palestinian resistance movement called Islamic Jihad. The occupation forces say the bombardments could last a week, promising more deaths.
As the bodies pile high in the Gaza Strip, emergency protests like this are being held against the Zionist regime's latest onslaught. The pain and anguish is palpable, and with people who have loved ones braving the bombings right now, silence is just not an option.
Two Islamic Jihad commanders have reportedly been killed so far, as have dozens of men, women and children. Palestinians living outside the territories can only pray their loved ones are spared.
Yes, I have three of sisters and I have my mother in Gaza Strip. I'm trying all the time to contact with them, but they told me everything is bad in Gaza Strip. We're just scared. The children is very scared, crying all the time.
They don't know if they will live until, like, you know, night or not. They say, if we respond to your call, then you know we are fine. If we don't respond, you have to be scared and you have to call, like, you know, our relative and see if something happened to us.
The West's handling of the Palestinian crisis, juxtaposed with the support Ukraine is getting, has thrown into stark relief the lack of political will on the part of Western governments to heal this decades-old wound.
The Palestinian problem has been going on for decades, and yet it isn't told about in the main press. Our governments do not support it, neither the Tory party or Keir Starmer or any of them, not even Ed Davey. Then none of them of the Liberal Party support what is going on. Why? Because it's more important to sell arms and to have some sort of democracy, they call it, in the Middle East. But what I think is happening is they're using Israel to create tension in the world.
Leave the Ukrainian with no armament whatsoever, because then if you give a gun to a Palestinian, he's a terrorist. But the Israelis can have all they like. And they are the victims.
The US has thrown its weight behind Israel, as has Britain. Both say Israel has a right to protect itself, but from what? More than 2 million Palestinians living in Gaza have no freedom of movement, sitting ducks for the Israeli occupation forces. In preparation for the attacks, Tel Aviv prevented fuel deliveries to the already impoverished enclave. As a result, hospitals that are only allowed 4 hours of electricity a day will soon be unable to cope. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Voice of
voices of grief and sorrow for Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam, a man who lived 14 centuries ago, but continues to inspire Muslims. Every year during the first 10 days of the Muslim calendar month of Muharram, Iranians get together in large mourning processions to mark the anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein. He and his 72 companions were killed in 680 AD by the forces of the tyrannical ruler of the time, Yazid ibn Muawiyah, on the plains of the modern-day Iraqi city of Karbala.
After 14 centuries, we continue to love Imam Hussein, not only as our third Imam and the Prophet's grandson, but as the symbol of self-sacrifice and freedom-seeking.
Every year, we participate in the mourning rituals for Imam Hussein to keep his legacy alive. We dress in black, beat on our chests, and shed tears. The blazes of his love never die down in our hearts.
The ninth day of Muharram is called Tasua and is dedicated to Imam Hussein's half-brother, Abul Fazl al-Abbas, who fought alongside the Imam against the army of Yazid. Abul Fazl is highly revered among Muslims as a symbol of loyalty and chivalry.
Abul Fazl holds a special place in our hearts. In the Battle of Karbala, Imam Hussein and his household and their companions were denied access to Euphrates River to drink water, and it was Abul Fazl who fought a large group of the enemy's forces to get to the river, but on the way back, he was brutally killed by the forces of Yazid.
The Karbala tragedy was sparked after Imam Hussein refused to pay allegiance to Yazid, who was known as a corrupt ruler. These people say without the sacrifices of Imam Hussein, Islam as we know it could have been distorted by Yazid.
The reason Imam Hussein rose against Yazid was to tell his community that Yazid was not treading on the path of Islam. And by spilling the blood of Imam Hussein, who was the Prophet's son, Yazid revealed his anti-Muslim stance, and this ultimately led to the decline of his rule.
The climax of the Muharram rituals is the day of Ashura, which falls on the 10th day of the month. That's when large groups of Shia Muslims converge on Imam Hussein's shrine in the city of Karbala in Iraq to pay homage to him.
The event of Karbala is a heart-wrenching story that touches the heart of every listener. But these people say, aside from its tragic side, Imam Hussein's martyrdom is an endless source of lessons about freedom and resistance for all generations. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Scores of people were injured and many more were arrested after government forces attacked Muharram mourners in the Indian-controlled Kashmir's main city, Srinagar. Authorities had placed strict restrictions in the city and sealed the entry points with barbed wires to prevent Shia Muslims from participating in the traditional procession. On Saturday evening, authorities issued a statement upholding a ban on mourning processions in the city centre. Police and paramilitary forces were deployed in big numbers to maintain order. Mobile internet services were suspended in parts of Srinagar. However, some mourners defied restrictions and poured onto the streets at many places to mourn the martyrdom of Prophet Muhammad's grandson, Imam Hussein. The government forces swung into action and hit people with canes. A number of mourners were also detained.
3 decades on, the authorities continue to prevent Shia Muslims from holding traditional Muharram procession in the region's city centre, citing security reasons. The people here argue if the government can allow Hindu processions and political rallies in the heart of the city, why not Muharram procession?
See, on one hand, we see the whole security mechanism, you know, they get activated when Hindu pilgrimages are granted permissions and security arrangements are being made. But on the other hand, we see when, something related to Muslims is there. They don't grant permissions. We don't want security at the first place. We want permission so that we could carry out our religious activities.
Very recently, ruling BJP party held a political rally in the city centre. If authorities can ensure security for that rally, why are our peaceful mourning processions banned? Why this discrimination?
Two major Muharram processions in the city centre were banned by authorities following the outbreak of militancy in Kashmir in 1989. The authorities fear the processions could be taken advantage of by separatist groups to stoke anti-India sentiments and hence create security threats. The religious bodies, on the other hand, termed the ban as a brazen attack on their religious freedom.
Yes.
It is very unfortunate that the authorities are selectively banning religious activities of the majority population here, shutting down mosques and banning processions, even as authorities claim the situation is improving in Kashmir. These days, annual Hindu pilgrimage is underway in Kashmir, and all sorts of arrangements are being made to facilitate that. We strongly condemn discriminatory behavior of the government and hope that the good sense will prevail.
The religious bodies have also criticized the authorities for failing to make necessary arrangements, like ensuring availability of essential supplies. They say all promises and claims made by the authorities have fallen flat. Sidri Safi, Indian administered Kashmir.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The leader's viewpoint on Imam Hussein's revolution and Ashura. On the day of Karbala, Hussein ibn Ali alayhi salam and his companions were martyred in an abandoned desert where there was not any friend and where there were many enemies. On that day, his family members were taken captive, and that was over. Today, this event, which should normally have been destroyed and consigned to oblivion after 10-15 days, is still prominent. Even after the passage of many centuries, the name of Hussein ibn Ali alayhi salam is shining like the sun, and it is enlightening hearts and offering guidance not only among millions of Shias and other Muslims in different Islamic countries, but also among non-Muslims.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
On the day of Ashura, Zainab al-Kubra salamullah alayha watched many of her dear ones go to the battlefield to get martyred. She watched Hussein ibn Ali alayhi salam, Abbas, Ali al-Akbar, Qasim, her children, and other dear ones go to the battlefield. After they were martyred, she went through all those pains. The invasion of the enemy, disrespect, and the responsibility to take care of the surviving children and women. Is it possible to compare the enormity of this tragedy with physical pain? But when she was faced with these difficulties, Zainab al-Kubra did not tell God to save her. She did not say, Oh my Lord, save me, while the shredded body of her brother lay in front of her eyes. Tells God, Oh God, accept this sacrifice from us. When she was asked to describe what she had seen, she replied, I did not see anything but beauty. All those tragedies were beautiful to Zainab al-Kubra because they were from and for God, because they were supposed to promote the word of God. The story didn't just end in the afternoon of Ashura. In fact, since the afternoon of Ashura, a movement started in history, which is still growing and expanding. It will be the same in the future too. Imam Hussein alayhi salam did all in his power to proclaim the word of truth and to save the people. These are some of the traits that a person in general can see and show in the Ashura event.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Lebanon's Hezbollah chief has stressed that resistance is the only option for Palestinian people in their present circumstances. He reminded the fact that Hezbollah stands at the forefront of the battle against the Quds occupied regime. On the home front, the Hezbollah chief has stressed the resistance movement will not allow Israel to even imagine plundering the Lebanese natural resources. Now, the warning is made amid a maritime dispute over the Karish gas field in the Mediterranean that Tel Aviv is trying to exploit. Welcome to The Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Let's see who's joining us in this episode of The Spotlight. Journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier in Marseille, France. Also with us is manager of the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, Firas Al-Najm, in Toronto, Canada. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Now, Elijah, the Hezbollah leader has lauded the Palestinian resistance fighters in the besieged Gaza Strip for their resilience and steadfastness, emphasizing that they have managed to impose their demands on the Tel Aviv regime, referring to the truce achieved recently between Islamic Jihad and Israel. Your thoughts on that, please.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
First of all, the Israeli Prime Minister intended to show that he couldn't bear the insult that his predecessor, Benjamin Netanyahu, suffered from the sword of Jerusalem last year when heavy losses have been inflicted on Israel during the last battle. So what happened in the last 3 days is a battle between Israel that considers itself the strongest army in the Middle East and one of the most powerful army in the world that is fighting a very small organization like the Palestinian Islamic Jihad that find himself alone in the battle against Israel and manage for 3 days to bomb and to launch more than 330 missiles and rocket every single day, when during the Sword of Jerusalem last year, all the group, Palestinian groups, launched 350 rockets and missiles per day. Now, when we see the Israelis running under the skirt of Egypt, Qatar, and the United Nations, asking for the cessation of hostility and for a ceasefire, it is shown that Israelis were in deep need to stop this escalation because it was not ready for it and it will never be ready for it because the domestic front is very fragile. Now, what the Palestinians managed is to bomb 58 settlements, and all the people were forced for the first time. All the Israelis were forced to be evacuated by the Israeli army and taken to other more secure location. And the Palestinian Jihad presented its demand and imposed its demand on the Israelis. And we have seen how the Egyptians announced first that the ceasefire is going to be announced at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, but the Islamic Jihad insisted on its demand, and Israel met this demand at 11:30 in the evening. So it shows how the Palestinian organization, the Palestinian Islamic organization, managed to impose its conditions on Israel and managed to impose the ceasefire according to its condition, not when the Israelis wanted. This is a very great achievement for one single group that earned more support by all the society that is hosting it inside Gaza, and a lot of respect by all the other Palestinian organizations, showing that this is the only way to fight Israel.
Right. And the interesting thing is that Islamic Jihad is not a very big resistance movement. Now, Firas, let's now focus on another fact, and that is Israel's vulnerability, and as Elijah put it, fragility. As time passes by, we see more of this. And we've got proof of this, you know, especially in the past decade, during which wars were fought and Tel Aviv faced defeat.
Yes. I mean, relating to the 2021 battle of Jerusalem, the Sword of Jerusalem, we've seen that the Zionist regime was very weak and they were being, hit by the rockets of the resistance heavily. Different cities were getting hit, and the Israelis would make all types of threats, but then they wouldn't even implement any of the threats. And we see the same thing with them threatening, for instance, the Islamic Republic of Iran. How much times has, presidents and prime ministers of the Zionist regime have threatened Iran, for all these years, but never did nothing about it? If you're such a mighty army and if you're so strong and you have such sophisticated weapons and you have such strong lobbies and you have such strong Western military support, by the U.S., U.K., France, and all these different regimes, so then why not go on with your plan? Why go and cry in the United Nations and make up fabricated lies that Iran has, for instance, nuclear weapons, or the Palestinians are being, supplied with all types of weapons, and this is a danger to the Israeli citizens and so on. It shows very weak points. Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, in recent speeches, he said that Israel is standing on one foot. So... they know that Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah is a very credible man when he speaks. He does not lie. We've seen that in the 2006 war, August war between the Zionist regime and the Lebanese nation and Hezbollah, the resistance, that they weren't able to get any of the conditions that they wanted to have completed, you know what I mean? And they infally pulled out, and they infally were released all the prisoners of Hezbollah and the exchange that was done mediated through Germany. So Israel's in a very weak position right now. And we've seen that they only fought, like you said a little while ago, that it's a small group. You know, Islamic Jihad is not a very big group. It doesn't have so many fighters, compared to Hamas, for instance. And they were targeting mostly this group, especially in Muharram. And they know that they're very tied to Iran and very close to Iran. And some of their members are also Shia Muslims that are Palestinian. So I think this was actually a deliberate attack as well on the followers of Imam Hussein at this time, by attacking in Muharram, the Gaza Strip, and hitting Islamic Jihad while the leader of Islamic Jihad, Nakhala, was in Iran sitting down with the president of Iran. So it's very significant. I think they were really targeting for an agenda. It wasn't just something, without any understanding or just an awkward attack. No, this was an attack. There was a precise plan to this, an agenda.
Right. Now, Elijah, Nasrallah and many others argue that given the goings-on, like the so-called normalization deals and the West's inaction as regards Tel Aviv's atrocities and violations, Palestinians need to boost deterrence and that the resistance is the only way ahead of them. Do you agree with that?
I fully agree with that for one simple reason. The Palestinians can no longer rely on the Madrid summit or the Oslo agreement or any other Gulf country that normalized relationship with Israel. So that is over. The only lesson that the Palestinians came out with after 70 years of struggle is that the armed struggle is the only way to get their right and recover their land. And what the Palestinian Islamic Jihad did in the last 3 days is to impose deterrence on the Israelis. Otherwise, the Israelis would have killed one leader after another, not only in the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, but also Hamas and all the other groups. So this is the only language that the Israelis understand. And we have seen how Hezbollah in Lebanon and in Syria managed to impose deterrence on the Israelis. And the Israelis are pulling back on targeting any Hezbollah individual or leader. For that, the Palestinians have learned the lesson. And the lesson is you have to become strong and you have to respond to any of the Israelis' aggression, even with your limited capabilities, because we have to understand that Gaza has been surrounded since its existence. And the two crossings depend on the Israeli mood and the Egyptian that respond to the Israeli desire and decision. Therefore, the limited support that Gaza is getting, it's managing to stand against one of the most powerful army, the Israelis, but imposing deterrence by responding for 3 consecutive days and during the Sword of Jerusalem last year for 11 days. This is how it is important to impose deterrence, but not relying on other countries, particularly the Arab countries, who signed deals with Israel.
Right. Now, Firas, let's take a glance at the role of the United States here. You know, the so-called Abraham Accord that they pushed and encouraged some Arab states to sign those normalization deals with the Tel Aviv regime. It's just further emboldened the Tel Aviv regime to perpetuate aggression against Palestinians, as you see, and get away with its crimes. Your take, please.
Yes, I mean, the Zionist regime relies on illegitimate regimes, and this is how they feel they're empowered, or they, you know, they're world mafia. You know, they're a bunch of mercenaries and criminals, and they've were able to put a system together and somehow get support. Mm. And they're when they reach out to tribal regimes, these tyrannical, tribal, treacherous regimes such as the Al Saud, the Saudi regime, or Al Nahyan, the Emirati regime, or Al Khalifa, the Bahraini regime. I mean, these regimes, they don't respect their own citizens, they don't respect human rights, they don't respect international law, they don't respect even democracy. They don't have anybody that's elected in their system. They're just inherited through tribal systems, you know what I mean? These systems are obviously going to somehow incline with the Israeli regime because they're both interconnected by supporting oppression, and both are people that love power and control and love just to enjoy life, and based on obviously they're enjoying life on the benefits and the interest of human beings and their own nations as well. So they kind of obviously gave them a little bit of empowerment that they can say now on TV and on the screens that we have other Arabic, or Muslim countries that are with us and they're supporting us and they're becoming allies with us, and they use us all the time. But then when we look at the real picture and who these regimes are, we know that these regimes are all have no credibility, have no respect for anything. And they're crumbling themselves. Their own nations do not trust them. They don't believe in them, and they're supporting illegal wars. Look what they're doing in Yemen. All those countries that we're talking about now that are supporting normalization were all involved in the coalition at a certain point. Even the Morocco is involved in certain point. So they're all involved also in killing their own neighborly countries and all Muslim countries and more. UK installed regimes also, if you look at the history of them and the base. And Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah made it clear in his speech that Bahrain it suppresses its own people in Ashura when people are trying to join their ceremonies and their processions for Imam al-Hussein and to commemorate this great figure that fought against injustice, that they will, the Bahraini regime is suppressing them, but they're letting the Zionists come and tour Bahrain you know, foreigners. They respect the foreigners more than their own citizens. So it's very clear who's on which side and what side is the good and what side is the bad. Mm-hmm. And the Israeli regime is the weak side, and they're, I just wanted to kind of shape the other person on the other side there that was speaking. He said it's a very powerful army in Israel. It's not the powerful army. They have powerful weapons. They have, you know, they have a militarized system. They have support, but really they're weak. We've seen them in 2006 in the battle. We've seen them in Gaza in 2021. We've seen them in many battles, and we see them also in Jerusalem. They cannot even face off with the senior citizens, the old ladies there that, you know, expose the Zionist IDF soldiers and Israeli police and humiliate them. You know, and even the young people of Jerusalem and the West Bank, you know, and what did we get from normalization? What did we get from peace treaties? Look at Mahmoud Abbas. What treatment and respect do they have for him? They walk into the West Bank every day, violate the people's homes, arrest who they want, shoot what they want. What did we get from negotiations? Nothing. The resistance is the only way forward, and it must be strengthened, empowered, especially in the West Bank. As Sayyid Khamenei said, that the West Bank needs to be armed and needs to be able to battle and support their other brothers in different cities in Palestine.
Okay, yeah, that's the key question, Elijah. What did they get from this? I mean, I'm talking about those Arab states who signed these normalization deals with Israel. What did they achieve apart from the fury of the Palestinians who feel betrayed?
The Arab states thought that approaching Israel means also approaching America even further and have the support of Israel in the region was also a favor that the Arab did to the Americans when they had no problem in selling the Palestinian cause and didn't mean anything anymore to them. Now, it turned out that America is no longer ruling the world. Its unilateralism is in question. Russia is challenging it. China is also challenging it. And two-thirds of the world is not with the West. I mean, the Americans and the Europeans. So all this relationship with Israel is to say we don't want war with the Israelis. They have never been at war with the Israelis. And they, above all, give up on the Palestinian cause when we see the Palestinians holding on to their cause, and they want their land generation after generation. And mainly what we see in Palestine is a very young generation. So the behavior of the Arab leaders, not population, because not all population agree with the move of their leaders. We've seen that in Egypt, we've seen that in Jordan, where both countries maintain since decades good relationship with Israel. And we see that in the in Saudi Arabia and the Emirates and in Qatar, when the Israelis killed the other day the Qatari journalists that worked for Al Jazeera. So we saw also the aggression that Qatar is having toward Israel. So all that, even if it is all kind of a show, at the end of the day, the Arab never supported the Palestinian. On the contrary, in the war in 2006 against Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Saudis were the first supporter of this war. In previous war, the Saudis and the Emiratis, they were offering intelligence information to the Israelis. So this kind of support has been going on for decades under the table, and now it's coming out to the public.
Right. Now, for us, let's talk about the Lebanon and issues related to that. Nasrallah said that the resistance movement is stronger than ever, and he says Israelis should not test the Lebanese resolve to protect their natural resources. That's a folly. Let's talk a bit about Hezbollah's growing military might.
Yes. I mean, they thought they got them in a trap when they went into Syria, but truly they gained a lot of experience there, and they fought a lot of different terrorist groups that were funded and supported and armed by the West and by the Zionist regime and by the Saudis and all these people. But all these groups came and all these mercenaries infiltrated inside Syria, but Hezbollah was able to defeat them and fight against them. So they really gained a lot of military strength. And also, don't forget, the war, you know, the Daesh war, when the ISIS controlled a lot of Iraq as well, Hezbollah was involved in supporting the Iraqis. And, you know, they're also... their integration and their work alongside Qasem Soleimani and the Iranian generals. You know, everybody's supporting everybody and everybody's helping each other, and they're learning from each other's experiences. So Hezbollah in 2006 also earned a lot of experience and learned a lot of ins and outs and weaknesses and strengths, and now they are preparing for a very decisive and strong battle coming up. Hezbollah now is ready, because as you can see, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah is saying that the Karish gas field is not going to be stolen by the Israelis. Right. We will maintain and we will we will liberate our areas. We will secure our sovereignty. We will secure our resources. And going forward, that we will not let anybody breach the laws or take our rights away. And Hezbollah is a credible organization and incredible political party that's democratically elected and respected. You know, they're very integrated also inside the system. They have one of the biggest allies with them, the Patriotic Party, Lebanese Christian Party inside Lebanon. I mean, they're ready for a very strong battle, and the Zionist regime isn't ready for this battle. And if they think they are, they're very foolish. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. And Elijah, Tel Aviv is going to exploit this gas bill, which is under dispute. Is this not a violation of international law? I mean, shouldn't the sides first try and, set a negotiating table and address the differences and points in dispute and clarify, maritime borders and do the demarcation and all that, and then do any exploitation of anything?
Well, I don't recall when Israel respects any international laws, exactly like the Americans never respect international laws, because international laws exist only when they are used by the West, but not when they are, and their allies, but not when they should be applied to every single nation around the world. Mm-hmm. So starting to explore the gas and oil in Karish or in other places, first of all, this is a Palestinian territory. It's a Palestinian sea. It's Palestinian land. Secondly, the Israelis don't really care about what to take and who this belonged to, as long as they want it. So this is where it goes back to your previous question, imposing deterrence. Only when Hezbollah managed to impose deterrence on Israel that the Hezbollah menace against the Israelis, if they start exploiting the gas and oil, they will get a war. This is the only language that Israel understands, not the international law that are violated every single day. Surrounding Gaza is a violation of the international law. Preventing oil, fuel and food and medical supply to Gaza is a violation of international law, as said by the United Nations rapporteur on Gaza. So all these are behaviors and attitude of Israel that is very well known. Assassination of leaders, assassination of Palestinians or Iranian or Lebanese or Syrian or Iraqi, these are violations of international laws. There is nothing new in that, because Israel doesn't care about the international law.
Okay. Now, on that note, we come to the end of this show. Let me thank our guests. We had journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier in Marseille.